If this were a Reese's TV ad, you'd be staring at a Reese's peanut butter cup. And sure, my voice is peanut buttery smooth, but still, you need to see the peanut butter cups, right? No? I can really just say Reese's and you'll go get some? Okay. Reese's. 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 Really working, actually. Reese's. Reese's. This, I'm onto something. Reese's. Reese's. Reese's.
You would think that when Arsenal get Saka back that they will go on a bit of a run and they'll maybe eclipse them. It's almost kind of hard to see them finishing below Manchester City now.
Join in the obsession.
Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Koigig Pod on Off The Ball in association with Cadbury, official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland Women's National Team.
Katie McCabe, a huge, huge goal.
I'm very proud of the team's performance.
We're going to go out there to beat them. We're going to try and beat them.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Koi Gig Podcast. Kathleen McNamee here with you as always to run through all the action from the WSL over the weekend, and quite a lot of action there was. Some interesting red cards handed out, which we will discuss a little bit later on, and also an absolute record-breaking transfer into the women's game with Naomi Girma sadly deciding that she didn't want to join Arsenal and going to Chelsea instead, which I'm not bitter about at all. But to look at that, and also, of course, our usual team of the week, and quite a lot of movement on the Irish women's side of things as well in terms of players going places or us not quite knowing where some of them will land. I am joined by Karen Duggan and Scarlett Heron. Guys, you are very, very welcome.
Thank you very, very much.
None of us have blown away, thankfully, after the windiness of the weekend. Some of us may be stranded in the west of Ireland, but
us yuppies in Dublin, we're fine.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I left Dublin on Saturday morning to help some family out with storm damage, and it was blue skies, not an inch of wind. I live beside Phoenix Park, there's a lot of big trees, and literally you would have had no idea that anything had happened. And then got out west, and this is the first time I've had electricity and hot water since. So,
well, just in time for the podcast.
Exactly.
That's the main thing.
All very well planned.
Yes.
But thankfully, I did still manage to watch football over the weekend. That kept me nicely entertained. And Scarlett, I know you mentioned this a little bit earlier when we were planning, but we have our first 1 million transfer in the game. And it's for a defender.
I know, it's shocking. You'd think it would be one of them strikers who can sort of score you 20 goals a year, but no. It's nice the defender's getting a bit of a shout out there, probably a bit underappreciated at times. So yeah, it's great. Obviously Chelsea getting her signature in the end, but it's massive, and obviously it's been all over the news, which is a great thing as well. And it should be sort of recognised as a big step for the women's game. Obviously the last few years has been massive in just improving every aspect of the game in terms of grassroots, opportunities for girls in sport, and just the amount of funding and viewership you get. And this is another big step. You look at all the different articles this week talking about how sort of the FA banned it for 50 years, and now 50 years on from the men's sort of first £1 million transfer with Trevor Francis, we've kind of come full circle and we're back now. So it kind of does. It's funny because it kind of is like a 50-year gap in that, which is just interesting. But yeah, it's really special, and I hope that this is now, if you'd obviously hope it's a start of more money being put into it and being invested in players, because a lot of people wouldn't have even heard of Naomi Girma before this week, obviously with a bit of bias towards the leagues here and across the water. But Emma Hayes describing her as the best defender she ever seen, that's some statement from the amount of players she's coached and the quality that she's coached. So I can't wait to see her now next week, hopefully.
Yeah, I maintain that Chelsea have an unfair advantage in all of this, because she said that she talked to Emma Hayes about where the best club in England to potentially go to would be. And there's no way that Emma Hayes wasn't telling her to go to Chelsea. So,
after the weekend, I think that we can pretty much say Emma Hayes was right.
Yeah, of course. But like, would it not be more fun to go somewhere and have a bit of a challenge?
No. There's a Champions League in sight somewhere there for Chelsea, and they're going to add and add and add until they get their hands on that.
Well, as
And the
Lucy Brown
lads.
said at the weekend, they're going for a unbeaten season. They've won 11 out of their 12 games so far, drawn one. But now they've added Girma. I mean, you look at her career so far, she's still so young. She was number one pick in the draft, captain her side at Stanford, has kind of been watched for the last good few years, I would say, as a potential star of the future. And the fact that you look at Chelsea, Karen, and they broke the British transfer record last year when they signed Mayra Ramirez. And within that short amount of time, they've now doubled it. I don't think we expected that to happen quite so soon. And especially, as I said at the start, for a defender, not to be hard on defenders around them, but just generally, they're not the players that attract those big money signings.
Yeah, it's completely unprecedented, but I also think it's clever by Chelsea. I mean, oh, she's 24. It's a long-term investment, really. You know, they're not doing, you see short contracts and stuff in the women's game so often, but this is an eye on the future, and that's what something Emma Hayes had started before she left. It was managing to build a squad and having a squad that had. When someone big left, you think of when, who was it, the girls went to Bayern Munich, Eriksson, wasn't it?
Oh yeah,
And
Magda
Magda
Eriksson
Eriksson.
and
And
Gunhild Harder.
yeah, so when they left, they were still easily replaced because of the recruitment they had managed to do in previous seasons and keeping somehow everyone happy. And obviously, you'll be looking at some of the Chelsea players in a couple of years' time. Will they be moving on? And they possibly will. But they're just going to be ready-made for that. I think it's brilliant, future-proofing by them. I think a lot of clubs could take a leaf out of their book. Obviously, it differs in terms of money. I think when we see this, the type of money coming into the league, the gaps between the top and the bottom could continue to grow. And that's a concern. Like you were looking at a lot of the games being played in the men's stadium this weekend, and the difference between an Arsenal-Chelsea game and even Villa City, and City be one of the bigger teams, just attendance wise, is that going to cause an issue, and or is it going to kind of dilute the league a little bit? I don't know. If a lot of that is still going to depend on how much the men's side will invest and that merry-go-round there. But in terms of Chelsea, they do mad things on the men's side, but this is very, very astute business by them. We
Is there
hope, I
any?
hope she has that kind of long, that her trajectory and the hype that she's been given, that she can like live up to it, because obviously there's a lot of weight on her shoulders now. But from what everyone is saying, she's very, very humble and looking to improve, and they're the type of people you want in your squad.
Is there any concern about them being able to double the record fee in the space of a year when they are 7 points ahead of everyone else? And as you talk about that gap that is potentially going to grow and grow, like I think I saw somewhere that that fee alone was like a quarter of Everton's operating costs. Now, hopefully, with Everton and the new owners, the fortunes might turn around a little because we know they've been severely underfunded. But say if you start looking at the championship teams that might be promoted, you know, you're getting similar sort of figures.
Look, I think that it takes something like this to challenge other clubs to step up. I know you can say Chelsea are a richer club and they have the means, and it's not fair on other clubs. But even the likes of Man United, you can see how the operating costs they have on their men's side and the amount of money they're wasting there. If you give them £1 million to spend, it would make a huge, huge difference. And they have it. It's just about challenging teams to grow in line with what Chelsea are doing and in line with Chelsea's ambitions. And it's not Chelsea's fault that other clubs aren't ready to kind of emulate what they're doing. They obviously have very clear ambitions. They want to continue winning as many leagues as possible. They want to win Champions Leagues, and they want their success to be sustainable. And yeah, it's up to the other teams to catch up now.
I have the fear.
You should.
I have the massive fear. It's not a place that I want to be in at all, looking at this Chelsea side getting stronger and stronger. But
No.
it does make for interesting. And I am curious, will it force like your cities and your Arsenals to start spending that bit more, especially when you look at the amount of money that City especially put in maybe not so much in recent years, but just when they were starting to build their squad up properly and they didn't have that much trouble like throwing large quantities, will they go back to that a little bit more? Arsenal, talk about this again a little bit later, but Jonathan Loo had a really good piece in The Guardian over the weekend about Arsenal and particularly that game against Chelsea and how Arsenal are willing to spend the money. The club are willing to put all this investment in to the club in general and how much they're
Emotion,
going to sell
yeah.
out the Emirates, but they don't have the swagger and they don't have the confidence about them as a team to kind of back it up a lot of the time. And I just thought that was a really interesting point because it does feel true, even though we have seen them go on a bit of a reinvention underneath Slager since she's come in, it still
The
feels.
approach to this game was a bit worrying, I thought. I thought
Yeah.
they played with fear. They played not to lose
Yeah.
when they needed to win.
Yeah. And it was almost like once things started going wrong, they were like, oh, things have gone wrong now. Let's just take a step back rather than it inspiring them. For anyone listening to a podcast, Karen has just gone into utter darkness and it's quite entertaining. But we will talk about that a little bit more. For now, we will turn to our team of the week, which Scarlett has very kindly pulled together for us. Scarlett, do you want to run us through who you have?
Yeah, can do. So a lot of forward options this week. In goal, we have Daphne Van Domselaar, and then we have three at the back of Millie Bright. We have Amber Tizak, and we have Gabrielle George. And then the two sitting midfielders, Missy Goodwin and Hinata Miziawa. And then in the 10 position, we have Katie Stengel, two wingers of Mary Fowler and Celine Bizet, and then Viviana Miedema and Bethany England up front.
I am not surprised to see Miyazawa in there. I feel like she was the talk of the town over the weekend, Karen.
Yeah, it's great. I just think that the partnership that she has there now allows her to just, she's such a clever player. She needed kind of the likes of Janssen to just set her free. And then you've got, like, when you've got your good players back, you've got your Graces back, and then you've got Toon back, and they free up space and they make the runs that she wants to pick out. It's enjoyable to watch, them play with a bit of pizzazz in the final third, because I think we still criticize them a bit at the start of the season, but they've really come good in the last couple of games, and she's been a huge part of that. And then it just comes from, yeah, energy and having the right people around you, and like someone like Miedema, having someone like Fowler as well around her, providing just a press and kind of that directness, and giving her early ball. I think that it says a lot about Fowler as well, how people are talking about what's Chloe Kelly going to do, where's she going to go, because she needs game time. She's not getting a look in because of how Fowler is playing. So yeah, they were obviously another two standouts, because I'd say both goals that they scored could be potentially up for goal of the season.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the Miedema one in particular, I just had a kind of shiver of, ooh, she's back. She's back to what we expect to see from her.
Yeah, and it's great. Well, obviously, if you're a Man City fan, it's great, because you're kind of mourning where's the Bunny Shaw goal is coming from, and they've dropped off a little bit now. Just that absence was quite telling, and maybe that their title run kind of ended without her, which is unfortunate when they have such good quality players. The timing just didn't kind of align for everyone to come good together. That's part of it. That's part of why you have your Chelsea's having a big squad. Like, I think it's noticeable that Bright is probably the only Chelsea player and there's no Arsenal players, and I think it's just a reflection of the game as a whole. But it's good to see different names in there. Like, you've got Tiziak from West Ham. That was a huge win for them. It drags them kind of out of danger, and all of a sudden they're looking at Liverpool and Spurs. It's mad how quickly things change at the bottom half of the table. And then a call out first personally for Bizet, because I think Man United really struggled on that right hand side in previous seasons, especially when Ona Bagie left. Like, Mallard and Jay-Z were kind of tried out there a little bit, and their end product isn't quite there. Whereas I think she's got nice bit of pace. She kind of varies up her game between coming inside and getting crosses in. So I think she's coming into her own as well, and she's quite dynamic out there as well. Big shout out for her. And I think England is in because she is it that she's scored against every WSL team now. Yeah. So, I mean, that's pretty impressive that she's still going. She got some cracking headers at the weekend.
Scarlett, is there anyone from that team in particular that you want to call out that you saw that was impressive? I mean, as Karen was saying there, it's nice to see West Ham represented. It's nice to see Leicester represented too. They obviously had a massive game at the weekend.
Yeah, I think Karen really touched on everyone there. But yeah, it was massive wins, obviously, for West Ham and Leicester. Missy Goodwin got the winner. Leicester were kind of... They were lucky enough to get the win, but they kind of did exactly what they needed to do. Got two goals that were dodgy, and I thought the penalty was soft. That's my opinion, I suppose. But it was soft enough. I thought it was actually a decent challenge by, I think it was Højgaard. But yeah, Leicester did what they needed, and this saw out the 3 points, which is huge. Like, now they're a good few points ahead of Palace, who were obviously in last place. 4 points. Yeah, that's... In the situation both teams are in, that's a comfortable enough gap now between them from a Leicester perspective. And then obviously for West Ham, I thought they actually had a great performance, had a lot of chances. I think Assi as well was really good on the wing. To be fair, she's been one of West Ham's most powerful players now, always popping up for a goal when you kind of need one. But she didn't make the team, but that's just another player. And then, yeah, Tasek at the back. And I think Anouk Denton as well was very good. I think she was the right back at the weekend. Just a great defensive display when they needed it. And, yeah, wins obviously for both teams.
And one that's always controversial on the podcast, but a losing goalkeeper in for goalkeeper of the week.
Yeah, I mean, Courtney as well had a great game, but I need to stop putting her in because I think she's probably the most featured player. Yeah, I know it's obviously the loss of the weekend, but as Karen said, it kind of sums up the game when there's only a defender from the winning team and then the goalkeeper from the losing team. It's not that Chelsea did apply a bit of pressure, to be fair, and she did what she needed to do, made 6 or 7 saves. A lot of them were routine enough, but yeah, I thought she had a good performance, and given the sort of
I think she recovered from a shaky start as well, which I think is always good to for a goalkeeper when they can, because we have seen we saw a lot of errors again at the weekend from even Leipzig, who we wouldn't, you know, that's 2 weeks in a row she's had a couple of bad games, and we were singing her praises for a whole season there, the season before. So it's so important that you recover from those moments, and she did that well, in fairness. And yeah, I do think Chelsea were the better team, so she did have to face down a lot of, you know, when you look at that Chelsea atop attack and there's so many of them coming into the box in waves, she stood up well.
Scarlett, thank you very much for that. And now we will move our attention to the rest of the games. So we might as well start with the first game of the weekend, which was a 6-goal thriller in which Gareth Taylor's 100th match in charge for Manchester City, which is kind of mad because it doesn't feel like it's been 100 games. But then I also think that there were so many seasons where City started poorly that I convinced myself he was going to leave, and then he wasn't fired and came back and did quite well. But it was an interesting game for both sides. City wobbly once again. Aston Villa saying goodbye to Dali. Fans chanting her name in the stands while she was there, because it's kind of seen as a goodbye game for her. So an interesting time for both clubs, Scarlett.
Definitely, and I think Dali's absence will be felt for Villa. Definitely in that midfield. I think that's somewhere where they've probably struggled a little bit. I actually thought the weekend they did quite well. Obviously, like, a lot of teams can score twice against City, and they've probably got unlucky with the climbing of the goals. But I think they did very well down the wings. I think they probably they went at City, which was good to see. They didn't. I know we talk about Arsenal sort of playing with fear. I don't think Villa really did that. They didn't really hold back in any way, but then you just see the class of Fowler and Miedema, like that goal, like Div's turn, I thought was better than the actual strike, even though it was one of the probably the goal of the season, as we said. But yeah, unfortunate for Villa. Like, I think it was a performance worthy of a win against nearly any other team in the league, but just unlucky that it was City on the day, and Villa just aren't having the season that everyone would have expected, really. we always sort of give them more credit maybe than they're due because they have the players that we think are good enough to compete in the league, but then are sitting with maybe 10 points from 12 games. So it's been really disappointing, but I don't think they'll be that disappointed with that performance. Maybe the first goal was a bit of a let off. They kind of centre half passed it through to Miedema, and it was just a really bad start to the game. Probably put them off on the wrong foot, but yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing with Villa is those sloppy goals that they're just continuing to concede. And maybe it is what you said, that midfield area, you know, you've dropped Daly a bit deeper. We know Nobbs likes to get forward, Hansen, Leon. They looked exciting in attack, but maybe it is just that gap in front of the back line that's adding a bit to the nervousness because they look like they leave themselves exposed. And you'd think against a team like City that you would, you know, you'd know well to kind of retreat and play kind of lower and try and not leave the gaps. But I guess the class of, like you say, the class of City shone through in the end, just the way they can kind of keep the ball. And I just think their movement is so good. Like Fowler can pop up here and there. Park seems to be everywhere. You know, they've got a lot of very, very willing runners as well as being very good footballers. They do work hard. And yeah, they were a little bit shakier at the back than usual, but I think they always had the confidence that they could go on and win the game.
If this were a Reese's TV ad, you'd be staring at a Reese's peanut butter cup. And sure, my voice is peanut buttery smooth, but still, you need to see the peanut butter cups, right? No? I can really just say Reese's and you'll go get some? Okay. Reese's. 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 Really working, actually. Reese's. Reese's. This, I'm on to something. Reese's. Reese's. Reese's.
Where do City find the consistency that they need? Because there's been a stage of every season over the last couple of years where we've seen them really struggle. They were absolutely brilliant going on that run, but then the last three or four games have been losses. I think I saw someone say over the weekend that May 2023 was the last time they conceded 2+ goals in consecutive matches, and that was in their three final games of the season that year. You know, again, we were talking earlier about Arsenal and maybe having the star power and not that swagger. City feel like they do have the swagger, but every so often they just become really leaky, and it's almost hard to explain where it's coming from.
Well, I didn't expect it this season. I thought with the start that they had, I thought they were going to really, really challenge. They were so good to start to watch, and they're still good to watch. But like you say, there's just that element of inconsistency. Sometimes I think the fact that they've changed their goalkeeper in and out hasn't been helpful. I think that's an area that they are going to need to nail down and potentially strengthen. And yeah, maybe it's just, I don't know. I actually can't put my finger on it because on paper, I think they have everything. They really do. They've got strength and depth, got creativity. They've got good defenders. Maybe the defenders do like to bomb forward a little bit, and it's what makes them good to watch. And they can leave themselves a little bit exposed. And particularly if you don't have a keeper there who's fully commanding that back line, that might be a problem. But I'm kind of clutching at straws here. Obviously Bunny Shaw's injury was a big one, but I can't put my finger on it. I really thought this was going to be the season, because the last couple of years, you know, the injuries have hit them very early in the season and it hasn't been great. Now I guess Hemp as well, it just goes to show that maybe they're not, when they have a settled team, they're almost too settled and people aren't quite ready to come in and make the same impact as the usual starters, which is a pity. Because, yeah, I think the gap is far too big for them to make an impact at this point.
Yeah, because Scarlett, we would have definitely said in previous years that you could see maybe that a lot of their struggles were potentially down to choices by Gareth Taylor, where he was changing the team around a lot. He was changing the formation around a lot. You didn't really know week to week what you were going to get. And then eventually things would settle a little bit. But it doesn't really feel like we can blame the little blip that they've had the last few matches on that, as much as I normally like to blame managers for everything.
I don't think so, to be fair. I do think it's what Karen says is very true about switching the goalkeepers, like even Keegan not playing this weekend after Harder against United. Like that's, I know, I understand you have to sort of give another goalkeeper an opportunity when one maybe messes up, but that doesn't do well for your confidence as a goalkeeper. And I think your defence and your attack all start from that goalkeeper. And as we're saying, like, you need that leader in there who's full of confidence, you know, and that you can trust. Like, your centre half needs to be able to pass the ball back to the keeper and know that this is either going in row Z or it's playing a pass out wherever, and you can know it's safe. But I think then, even with the own goal at the weekend, like, is that lack of communication? It's probably just unlucky as well. But small things like that, even the pass back to Keaton last week, it's all down to trust and sort of how players feel around the players around them, if trust them or not to play that pass back. And then you're playing maybe a defender could play maybe an iffy sort of half pass because they're afraid of their keeper's first touch or whatever. It's a lot of its mentality, and maybe that mentality is something that City are missing. And I don't know, I'm just sort of trying to have a guess at what's going on, because you can't really put your finger on it. It's not something that's logistical. It's not something that's right in front of us. It's obviously they've had injuries as well, but I like, you're bringing in players to make up for it. Like, you have Mary Fowler instead of Lauren Hemp. It's not as if you're bringing in an 18-year-old who's never played in the WSL. Like, so yeah, there's really no one problem, but I wonder if it's a mindset issue at this stage.
We need to get on to some of our Irish spies over there to see what the story is. We'll move on to Chelsea Arsenal. Not exactly the thriller that some of us hoped it might be at all. I mean, it was actually quite difficult to watch, I won't lie, at points.
Brutal. It was brutal.
But of course, we can't do this lot without discussing the red card incident, which I think some of us has felt maybe has been coming for a while. Katie McCabe, it's been confirmed today, because there was a bit of confusion about whether it was a yellow card followed by another yellow card for dissent, but it was just a straight red card, which means it's a 2-game ban rather than a 1-game ban for her, which is a big one considering the fact that she has started every game for Arsenal this season. She's been their most consistent player in that regard. And it's Manchester City coming up at the weekend, and not one that you want to lose points in, considering the gap that is between the two sides. Karen, I don't know what your reaction was when it happened.
I mean, not overly surprised. I think I understand it was a frustrating game. I don't think either team played particularly well, but it was a penalty. You know, she was right beside it. She would have seen Little make a tired tackle. It was unfortunate, obviously, for her. And you do get frustrated, and maybe you say something once, but after you've been given the card, you walk away, or a teammate drag you away. There has to be. They all need to do better in that situation, but mostly Katie needs to do better. She's a leader. She knows the team rely on her. She, like you say, she's the most consistent player. She's been playing brilliantly. But now they're in a battle for Champions League place. And yeah, they're disappointed that they let Chelsea, you know, get that gap and that penalty led to that. But you have to be mature enough to see a bigger picture. And it's too often for the same thing. And everyone talks about, oh, we love the edge and we don't want her to lose the edge, but you can do it in a more controlled way. And I think there's loads of campaigns now about respecting referees. We've seen what the GAA have done with the dissent rule. And it's going to continue to be clamped down on, because we've seen the repercussions of it at underage football and not being able to get referees. And I understand why. Abuse is a big thing. I've been prone to it myself in the past. I'm not saying to know that I don't get involved, but never to the point of a red card. And I think if you've gotten to that point against a referee, you've massively overstepped. And I think an apology is probably in order.
Yeah, Scarlett, it's an interesting one that's come in to the game, because for my sins in life, I get quite a lot of Arsenal fans who are very, very excited about their side on my Twitter quite a lot. And I just noticed, particularly over the weekend, I don't know, was it a combo because it was the red card and the penalty, but you were kind of seeing fans calling out this particular referee, and I'm not going to say her name and add more stuff to it because I just don't think it's necessary. But like, you were seeing fans directly attack her and say, this referee clearly has something against Arsenal. Here's all these other things. Here's like a blow by blow screenshot of what happened. So obviously it wasn't a red card, or obviously it wasn't a penalty, or, you know, she clearly has a bias and all these things. And it's a side of the Premier League that we haven't really had as much in the women's game. And it's quite unfortunate to see it come in.
Yeah, like it's one of the probably one of the only things from the men's game that we don't want to take. But I said it's kind of creeping in now. I think like it's an obvious thing to say, like that's just, it's just stupidity. Saying those things online, it's not going to change anything. It's not going to change how the decision was made. It's not going to change the outcome of the game. It's not going to change Katie's suspension. And if anything, it'll just hinder Arsenal more, because that referee will now be looking at those comments. And like that affects people. Like referees are human beings. Like, and it's difficult, because in the heat of the moment, I understand like Katie's frustration. You can always understand the player's frustration with a game like that. That's obviously the deciding factor of the game, but just can't react that way. And if you do it once, don't turn around and do it twice in a row. Like, it's silly. But yeah, I think in the heat of sport, everyone gets a bit too obsessed with. Like, I remember I refereed one under 12 tournament in my hometown about a year ago, and the abuse I got from parents was like so funny, because it's a blitz. Like, it's nothing. There's no trophy. There's nothing for it. It's just their kids are out playing, and it's hilarious, really, the amount of like grief they get and the amount of stick they get. And you see that in the men's game as well. You're on about fans trying to work out biases with referees, saying, oh, he or she did this 6 months ago and he said this to her, like whatever. It's all reading too much into it. And here, the referees, they make mistakes, players make mistakes, managers make mistakes. It's all part of the game. And I think it should just be left at that.
But the thing is, like, I saw people starting to call for VAR, like the Arsenal managers calling for VAR after that incident. It was a penalty. Like that, at the end of the day, it was. Like, she didn't make any contact with the ball. She was going, like, Lauren James would have gotten a shot off. Fair enough, make a tackle. But it was a penalty. So the debate shouldn't be rumbling over this situation. It should be the offsides and those kind of poor decisions that we've seen, and you know, lines people perhaps more so than even the referees in the middle of the pitch.
Yeah, let's educate the referees we actually have before we start giving them a proper opportunity to develop their skills.
Yeah, and also there probably should be another concerted effort to talk about the culture in the game, and not letting the kind of abuse culture slip into the women's game in the way that it's become quite prominent in the men's game. And if that means giving out more cards for things like that, then obviously it's going to cause frustration to fans, but it's the only way that as players we kind of will learn, you know. And I think, again, it's a culture thing, a respect thing. All the best teams, you know, they have that kind of culture of respect, and we just need to make sure that it doesn't slip. And that like that Scarlett says, that starts from, you know, parents of underage teams, managers implementing it the whole way through, the whole way up, and not allowing it in. But that's obviously a bigger, wider issue. If we're sticking to the facts of this game, it was a bad penalty to give away.
Yeah.
If this were a Reese's TV ad, you'd be staring at a Reese's peanut butter cup. And sure, my voice is peanut buttery smooth, but still, you need to see the peanut butter cups, right? No? I can really just say Reese's and you'll go get some? Okay. Reese's. 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 Really working, actually. Reese's. Reese's. This, I'm onto something. Reese's. 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 Reese's.
I think that's an agreement, and we can chat about more. I just want to point people in the direction of one good conversation that I listened to during the week with Rebecca Welsh, Alex Scott, Jilly Flaherty and Steph Horton, who are all inducted into the WSL Hall of Fame. Welsh is the first referee to be inducted, and obviously she's had an incredible career so far and it's still doing great stuff in the game. But it was just really funny listening to them, because I think Steph Horton in particular, she had ref quite a lot of her games, and they were kind of laughing, saying, I think this is the first conversation we've ever had but we're not screaming at each other about something. And it was a good reflective piece from the two of them about, you know,
the player on one side, the ref on other side, and kind of now that they're out of it, being able to discuss it in a way. So I checked that out. I think it's on the YouTube for the WSL, but you'll definitely find it on social media anyways. In terms of the actual game here, I briefly mentioned it a little bit earlier about Arsenal and just that lack of swagger and the lack of confidence that they seem to have, and how, I think, Karen, you put it best, that they were playing not to lose rather than playing to win this game.
Yeah, and it was people like Williamson who I thought started quite shakily. I thought, I don't know if they didn't expect Chelsea to press with the vigour that they did, but they seemed a little caught off guard. I thought Chelsea, at the start of the game, I thought Chelsea were going to actually win the match well. They started well. They looked the more eager, the size. It kind of petered out then a little bit in terms of quality in both ends. But when you have kind of your leaders on the pitch looking a little bit shaky, that can filter its way through. And I think, yeah, I think they were a little bit afraid of Chelsea. I understand why, because they were very, very good.
We're all a little bit afraid of Chelsea.
We're all a little bit afraid of Chelsea. We're getting more afraid by the day. But yeah, they didn't do enough to threaten Chelsea and try and put them on the back foot. And we just haven't seen Chelsea put on the back foot enough this season. Like, we can't really like pick out the back line in terms of defensive stuff, because most of Bronze and even Charles, most of their play is in the forward areas of the pitch now. But yeah, it was just one of those games that was just boring. It was so boring.
Scarlett, we were expecting something a bit more thrilling, it has to be said, for this game.
Yeah, and like I was about to say there, I don't think Arsenal had a shot until about 25 minutes in, which just...
This must be, like, how many games has that happened into Arsenal, though, as of late? Like, it looked like they'd maybe improve things a little bit, but...
Yeah, and obviously we've been talking the last few weeks about Russo and sort of how she's come into herself. Like, she was sort of nowhere to be seen at the weekend. And yeah, as Karen says, they just didn't go for it. And a team against Chelsea, you kind of have nothing to lose. Like, you'd nearly rather go out and go for it for the first 45 minutes and go in at halftime 3-0 down and lose the game 3-0 than come out with that result, losing 1-0 and thinking, could have done more, could have done this. Like, I know, I understand you're not looking to get a hammering, but you'd rather go for it and have a chance. Like, at least if you get an early goal against Chelsea, like, you could shake them. You never know. And then if you want to go defend the rest of the game, they can try that. I mean, they did well enough not to concede until late in the game. So, yeah, I don't know. I just think that they should have went for it a bit more, a bit earlier on.
It just doesn't show any ambition. And I thought that maybe had kind of started to flip a little bit with getting rid of Eidevall and Slagers coming in, because the whole Chelsea-Arsenal rivalry had kind of come more about him and Emma Hayes and their back and forth rather than what was actually happening on the pitch. And you could see that things were changing when Slagers came in. But sadly, it doesn't seem to be. And Arsenal seem to think they can only play like that against mid-table teams. It'll be interesting to see if there's a difference this weekend against City, because if they go into this game with the same sort of feeling of them being invincible and that, you know, that play to not lose rather than play to win, I think it says a lot about the psychological work that's going to be needed to be done on the team over the next couple of months. Because realistically, the title is gone now. It was probably gone before this game, but it's definitely gone now. So yeah, it's going to be...
I think it's just a Chelsea hang-up, to be honest. I think it's just acknowledging the gulf that's there. And, you know, previous seasons, they've run them close, but not quite close enough. And that kind of plays on your mind a little bit. But yeah, like you both mentioned, this was the time to go for it, because losing all but ended any ambition. It's very hard to pick yourself up now for the rest of the season when you thought you'd go in as title challengers and now your main ambition really just being to secure a second place. Obviously someone like Man United, that's the aim anyway, you know, that's their be all and end all, is to try and move up a spot in the table. But when you're in Arsenal and you have those expectations for yourself, it's a little bit harder, I would imagine, to pick yourself up.
Yeah, Definitely. And Karen, that is a perfect segue to what I want to talk about next, which is Manchester United. They are flying it at the moment, to all their credit. That win at the weekend, 3-0, that puts them in second place, 27 points, 3 ahead of Arsenal, 2 ahead of City. They've had a great run of matches. Last 4 games in a row they've won. We talked about Miziyawa earlier, who's looking more and more confident. Skinner was praising her footballing brain at the weekend, saying how much it's impressive. And I don't know if it's necessarily that they've sneaked up there, but there's just been so much change between those kind of three of City, Arsenal, United, that it's very easy to lose track as to who is actually in those Champions League spots.
But look, they've capitalised on whatever poor form either City or Arsenal have shown, which is great. I was afraid that the likes of Brighton would kind of catch them this season. But this recent run of form has been really, really telling. And it's like we spoke about on the opposite end with all of the lower half of the tables, your Everton and stuff, when they don't concede early and they give themselves a chance, they can play into the game. Similarly, I think if Man United score early, they've become so much better defensively that they're not giving up those chances and they get confidence to keep going forward. And that it's like they score and then they kick into gear and they become a different beast. And that's what's happened in the last couple of games. Now they've been gifted goals, which has definitely, definitely helped. I just think there's a little bit more purpose to their play, a little bit better linkage, better balance across the team. They don't look as vulnerable at the back. I think having settled fullbacks is probably that play in those positions has been very, very helpful. They have a very settled back line now, which I think is good, very good goalkeeper. And you just needed people who can put the ball in the back of the net. And I know that maybe not on the scoreline this week again, but Terland does that kind of dogged work that someone like Toon, who's not as physical, needs. And it helps her a lot that she's willing to do that. And that's what Russo used to do for Toon as well. And that's why their partnership was so good. But you can see the likes of Terland and Galton, they'll do that work for the others. And that frees your Ella Toon, Miyazawa, and obviously Grace Clinton when she's on the pitch to go and do their thing. So I think the balance is better. I wouldn't be getting overly ahead of themselves, because I do think a lot of it is based on the form and the teams that they've played. We mentioned last week, the last 3 games of the season, you know, you could potentially lose 9 points there and then all of a sudden you're back down to fifth maybe. But I think they should ride this wave. It's been a while since you've kind of felt like they were on an upward trajectory. They're in second place now. They've definitely got something to play for. And that's huge for them. It really is. If they were in fourth spot now and you're looking up at those two teams or three teams who traditionally you haven't been able to catch, again, like Arsenal, it'd be a bit of a punch in the gut and it's hard to motivate yourself there. But yeah, all things going well. Obviously, a bit of a drop off from Brighton in recent times, well after their bright start of the season. But I think that kind of, again, the level that they are is kind of that just below the top.
Yes, girl, I was going to ask about that, because we were full of such praise for Brighton and we thought we were maybe finally seeing the potential that we've felt that they've had for a couple of seasons come into effect, but it hasn't happened. I mean, it's not that they're doing terribly. They're still in fifth. They have 17 points. They'll probably finish somewhere in that mid-table, but just interesting that we are seeing that post-Christmas drop-off.
I spoke a lot about Vidicic and sort of him coming into the league before Christmas and how much he had sort of changed that Brighton team, who had been developing for a number of years, never really seemed to break out of that sort of mid-table to low-table threshold. And now this year started flying and just everything seemed to have been clicking for them. But now, obviously, yeah, as you said, we're seeing the drop-off. Sort of Nikita Paris at the weekend with Perinoff, and she's sort of their only source of goals at times. Obviously, you have Vitolina as well. And when you see a 3-player substitution at half time, you're kind of thinking, yeah, that sums up the game for them. That sums up the first half. Like, see Vicky Lozada, who's been one of their most consistent players, getting whipped, and like everything just seemed to fall apart from it the weekend. Obviously, conceding 2 really early goals. Obviously kind of killed the game off early enough, but that was all to United's credit. Like, I've been talking about their press, and Karen mentioned it there, Galton and Terland just are absolutely, they're rapid with it and they're so intense with winning the, they're going to win the ball. And a lot of players, I think, press with the intention of like forcing a player out one side, which is like the sort of tactical thing nowadays, is force them one side and try trap them. But when they go with an intention to win the ball. And I think that works has been working for them really well over the last few weeks. And we've really seen it in the last two games, especially to the game at the weekend and obviously the game against City. So I think it's credit to United and just how they set up and how they attacked the game. And I think after 10 minutes, there was really no coming back for Brighton.
Again, they've had a bit of a tough run of fixtures, obviously, United, Arsenal. They would have been targeting the win against Liverpool. I think that, that based on Liverpool's form, that was obviously not a great one. But now you're looking forward, you're looking at Crystal Palace and West Ham. And again, 6 points, that kind of will definitely keep them up in that fourth or fifth place position, you'd imagine. So they do have the ability to kind of turn it around and get a run of form back again, especially considering the teams around them being very inconsistent, your Spurs and your Liverpool, two teams who, yeah, have just disappointed a little bit
throughout the course of the season. Next, Karen, so I don't know which one you want to start with.
Liverpool, I think, because again, I was just a game you have to win if you've got ambitions. I don't know what is really going on with Liverpool at the moment, low confidence maybe, but this is, it's been a really, really poor period for them, and especially when you get gifted a goal that early, you think that again that you'd be buoyed to go at a team like Leicester, but it's almost that they think they're better on the break, and they did invite pressure on themselves at times. They're just a little bit uncertain in their clearances, a little bit shaky. Just, yeah, it's just not going great.
That is a trend, though, that we have seen with Liverpool, Scarlett, where, and it's not that they necessarily always lose, but they did the same thing against Brighton, where they scored relatively early in the game. I think it was in like 20, 30 minutes. And then they let Brighton back into the game and then they had to come back. And we've seen it a few times from them.
Yeah, and I think the two goals, like, I think there were just serious lapses in concentration. Like, the first one was just sort of a looping ball into the area from a set piece, and it was just really poorly defended. And then you look at the second one and it's like little ducks following their mum, like running after the ball, and then there's someone free at the back post, and it's the slowest finish I've ever seen in my entire life. The ball crawled across that line. Like, I've actually never seen the ball move slower. But
I know, I feel like Goodwin was like willing it in so much, he was really blowing at it to try and get it to move a bit quicker. But look, it was in the corner and the keeper was wrong footed, but she had so much space, like Scarlett said, like, it was just far too much space in the box, and you can't be complacent, not when you're in the run of form that Liverpool are in. Can't afford those complacent moments, and it's a real one where I think a manager needs to sit them down and have a good strong word and say this isn't good enough for who we are and what our ambitions are.
But do you think that conversation hasn't already happened this season? Like, Beard hasn't been exactly quiet about how disappointed he is with their performances this year and how he's expected more. And I know there has been some comments sprinkled in there about the size of the squad, and they obviously had some really unfortunate injuries early on, and the investment as well. But he doesn't feel like the sort who would take all of this lying down.
No, well, then if you have to look at the players who are on the pitch, how they bring in leadership. Is that what's lacking on the pitch? Is there enough of that within the group? Because a manager can have strong words and you can take it all on board, but if you don't have someone driving those standards on the pitch, obviously Niamh Fahey not involved, who's taking on that role? You know, and someone has to step up, and more than one person has to step up, and you need all your backline to be leaders. I think Smith is leading from the front as best she can, but she can only do so much with limited service. So yeah, there's obviously a bit of introspective work that Liverpool need to do as well, because we know that they have capabilities. We know that they're very, very dangerous on the break. They've got a lot of pace. At the start of the season, they were quite solid defensively. I liked the back three. They're just, yeah, like you say, affording lapses of concentration, that can happen. I think that that's just a matter of I don't know if it's confidence now at this point that that's down, or if it's leadership or what it is, but it's not good enough for the talent that they have to be losing to Leicester. This is a game, again, that you'd be thinking 3 points.
Guaranteed. In the other two games, Tottenham just coming out over Crystal Palace. Again, I feel like we say this every week about Crystal Palace. They're so unfortunate. Holt coming off the bench on the 82nd minute, making her debut and scoring. She just joined from Rosengard last month. And we also had a debut scoring in the West Ham's 2-0 defeat to Everton. Shakira Martinez getting her goal there, and Everton just having poor luck once more. I mean, 17 chances, zero on target. It's just...
I mean, well, that's the stat. That's the standout stat, isn't it, with Everton? They don't get enough good quality chances. They don't create enough. And as long as they try and hang into games, but again, they conceded too early to hang into this one, and they don't have the ability to go and pepper teams with good quality chances, and that's going to continue to let them down in these close games, because it was close-ish in terms of quality, but West Ham had better chances and more potent people up top. I actually thought Martinez was very, very good. I thought Sayu was good. Whereas when you look at the Everton attacker, I feel like they're feeding off scraps a lot, hopeful mm-hmm. balls into the box, things like that.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you both very much for all that great analysis. We will be back again next week with another weekend of fixtures. As I said, the big one next weekend is Arsenal facing Man City, which I'm obviously so excited to watch. Can't wait for that. But Tottenham United and also Liverpool West Ham should be quite interesting as well. The Koi Gig Pod on Off the Ball is brought to you by Cadbury, official snack partner to the Republic of Ireland women's national team. Thank you very much for listening, and we will chat to you all again next week.
The Koi Gig Pod on Off the Ball, in association with Cadbury, official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland women's national team.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. That's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.